This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
All right, we are halfway home on a Wednesday. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Kind of a chilly-looking gray day out there, which matches the mood, I think, of a lot of Padres fans still. You know, a lot of people having trouble getting over it. And I certainly understand where you're coming from. You know, I kind of am of the opinion that life does go on. The sun will rise. We will continue to grind. I know AJ Preller is probably back on it already, trying to figure out how they can improve this team. We are still waiting for the end of the season media kind of scrum on Zoom where we can listen to AJ talk about it. Ask him some questions. I'm looking forward to it. I never look forward to those, but I am for this year. I want to see what the message is, what the attitude is. I saw Dave Dombrowski did his yesterday for the Phillies. Did a great job. I thought he did a great, great job answering a ton of questions and you know, player-specific stuff. It was really interesting stuff. If you're a baseball fan, to listen to that GM up there going, yeah, Taijuan Walker, not guaranteed a spot in the rotation. We gave him a plan. Let's see what he can do. He needs to get back to being dominant, but he'll come in and compete. You got it?
What are you going to do with Taijuan Walker?
Well, Taijuan Walker, he did not have a good year, as we all know, so no need to pound that into it. When we have sat down with Taijuan before he left, he was given a very detailed program from a conditioning and throwing perspective. Not that he's in bad condition, but that, and to get him ready to try to get him back to be the pitcher that he was in the past. He is in a position where I'm convinced he will work hard on that to get it done. I would think he'll come to spring training with us next year, but he's not guaranteed a starting spot. I don't think I can just say, hey, you're our fifth starter. I think he would come to camp and be in a battle to try to win a spot in the rotation.
That's interesting stuff from a GM of a team.
Why? Well, first of all, would you actually go to this press conference? Because you don't generally appear at a lot of the AJ Preller press conferences. Yeah.
From what my understanding is, it's probably going to be on Zoom.
So, I mean, now that, you know, pandemic is in our rearview mirror.
It was in our rearview mirror last year.
A lot more toward in-person. I don't know at this point. I don't know if they're even going to do one. You feel like they have to do one? Like, what questions do you feel like need to be answered at this moment?
I mean, I don't think you can. I think that the exit interview type thing is absolutely necessary.
Is it?
Yes.
Or is it eyewash?
No, it's necessary. It's necessary.
I think last year was absolutely necessary. There was a ton of lingering questions from that season. The disappointment of 2023.
Sure. Here's a question. Okay, so everybody, it was a great season. No question. It didn't end the way you wanted it to end. How do we keep the vibes going next year? Are you guys planning on spending more money? Are you, you know, after 56 sellouts at Petco Park, what kind of restriction? You had a massive restriction.
I mean, you're not getting,
from our perspective,
get an answer,
you know, the season just ended.
Well, I still want it.
We're going to go reevaluate.
By the way, that question was asked last year. Are you going to reduce payroll? Are you going to finish go below the luxury tax? We still haven't heard one answer to that question. The only answer they have given us is they actually reduced payroll by about $90+ million and got under the luxury tax. Not once, I don't think once I heard AJ Preller, Eric Grubner, Eric Kotsenda ever mention the words luxury tax, CBT, reset of the payroll, payroll reduction. Not once was that ever mentioned. It was written a couple of times by Kevin Acey. You know, numbers that turned out to not really be correct. I think the first speculation was, well, they're probably going to go down to like 220, but they're never going to be able to get it under the luxury tax number. But then it became clear from the moves they made, even though they've still never actually said that their goal was to get under the luxury tax. Not once have they said, we want to reset our luxury tax number. Correct? Am I missing? Do I not remember something that was said? Because I do not recall any actual discussion of the reason why we have lowered our payroll so much is because we would like to get under the luxury tax penalties. No, clearly that is the reason they were doing it, but they haven't ever acknowledged it once. They don't talk about it. They do not talk about specific payroll levels, and I don't expect them to ever start doing that.
Still going to ask them. According to SpotTrack right now, total cap allocations, the adjusted payroll total is $154 million. 154,535,453. So $155 million, call it. Adjusted payroll total for the year 2025 is $154 million. You need to spend more money.
Well, some of that, you know, arbitration increases for players like Michael King and Luis Arraez will eat up and make that number go up before you've even actually done anything. But that's where it sits right now.
Right now, today. Yeah, because there's guys in ARB,
yeah,
you know, that are going to get, like, you've got Luis Arraez in ARB 4, Jason Adams in ARB 3, Camposano's in ARB 1, Michael King is in ARB 3, Dylan Cease is in ARB 3. So, yeah, I mean, that number is going to go up. But as it stands right now, that's where you're at right now. You still need to spend more money. you need to spend more money.
I think there is a question of whether you're willing, if the right player came along, whether you'd be willing to go back over
right.
the luxury tax level number again, like you did in previous years, or if that's not something, you know, you're willing to do again. You know, once you reset your penalties, they're not as bad for going over once. I don't think we're ever going to see the Padres, you know, now that Peter Seidler is gone, I don't think we'll see the consistent, like, 3 years in a row blowing past it. The luxury tax level. You don't see other teams doing it. It was pretty shocking that the Padres did it, and I don't expect that to go forward. But there is certainly the possibility that if the right player came along, you'd be willing to do it once. I mean, you know,
attendance
remains very, very good, and
yeah.
you should try to continue to foster that.
That's the thing, is like I was telling Hannah yesterday, I said, you can't lose this momentum. And I know it ended poorly, and I know it ended in a huge disappointment, but it still ended in a game five against, you know, a juggernaut, the LA Dodgers. You still had 56 sellouts. You know, you can't lose that momentum. You just can't.
Baseball laughs at your momentum, though. Last year they had zero momentum and they cut payroll, which would, you know, you would think most teams with zero, you know, a hugely disappointing season that cuts $100 million of payroll, welcome to last place and empty ballparks.
Yeah.
Instead,
not this team.
Welcome to 93 wins and sold out Petco Park 57 times and a record attendance.
So, I'm not talking about the momentum of the team. I'm talking about the momentum of the city, and I'm talking about the momentum of the fan base. That's what I'm talking about.
Right, but
the fans packed that place regardless. The fans packed that place when they were 50 and 50.
The fans want to see wins. They don't want to see payroll. They want to see wins.
Well, right, but they packed that place when they were 50 and 50. That's what I'm saying. You can't lose the trust and momentum that your city has built. I'm not talking about the momentum of wins and losses. I'm talking about what this city has decided to become. You can't go in lick your thumb and put your thumb over the flame. You just can't.
You could double the payroll next year, and if you lose 85 games, people aren't going to be happy.
No.
And you could cut payroll, and if you win, you know, 97 and win the division,
they're going to be ecstatic. But the thing is I think they're going to – you want to make sure that they continue to show up, right? You want to make sure they continue to come.
Of course.
The way that you can guarantee people will come, Ray, is to have good players.
If I was in the Padres front office, Eric Grubner, you know, his staff, when Peter Seidler said, we're going to spend a ton of money, I would have been a nervous wreck going,
100%.
Okay, we need an insane number of people to show up to make this even, like, come close to working in our budget. I mean, we're going to need to set attendance records every single year. Well, you have. So now what do I worry about? Now we've got to keep all these people. We've got to keep them coming back every single year. You know, we have to be... You know, the Red Sox, how many years in a row did they sell out Fenway, you know, when they were winning the World Series?
Ton.
You know, we need to now go 20 straight years where Petco Park is essentially full every single night. And that's what would now stress me out and keep me up at night. How are we going to make sure that we don't lose you know, a drop of these fans that we have gotten into our ballpark. We have given them fun, good experiences. Now, how do we keep them?
It's not.
How do we keep them coming back?
You know, and I love the upgrades and all that stuff and the new options and all that, and I always will, but that's not what moves me, and I don't think it's what moves the fan base. You know, ticket prices went up. Padres fans said, okay, we got it. Let's go. We're still going to go. What moves the people is the players, the passion that they have for the game, the way that they played hard, the way that they had comebacks. That's what moves the moments, man. That's what moves the people.
But what about the phenomenon? And you saw it at Dodger Stadium, you know, day game. Where were all the people? It was, you know, looked half empty, you know, potentially. Arizona, you know, have great seasons. Fans still don't show up. I mean, you know, you get spoiled when you start winning every year.
Let's worry about that problem when we start winning every year.
It's fine.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, they're not there yet.
No.
But, you know,
we're on our way.
If I'm an executive, though, I'm already, like, worried about that problem. All right, let's say we continue to win and make deep runs into the playoffs 3 years. When does that not be enough for fans? How do we keep them in beyond that?
It's
because
true.
to make it work economically in San Diego, you got to keep doing this. You can't
all
of a sudden go back 2.5 million fans, because that's going to be a huge, you know, hit on your revenue and budget if you do that. So you got to keep setting records and bring in as many people to Petco Park as you have the last couple of years.
Yeah, no question. No question. And you have to keep that momentum going, you know? And it's not going to be with stopgap players. It's got to be with guys that put asses in the seats, as we say all the time. Luis Arraez, he was a guy, when you made that move, brought an immediate burst of energy, not only to the clubhouse, but to the fan base. Okay. Dylan Cease, the trade for him. No, it didn't work out for Dylan in the end, but that's a guy you're like, I've got to go watch this guy throw. He threw a no hitter this year. I'm talking about the moments that get the fans to the ballpark.
I think next year they'll be pretty good. I mean, there's still, you know, reportedly a wait list for season tickets. And I don't anticipate a lot of people going, well, after what I saw this last year, I don't want to be a part of the 2025 Padres. No. I think most people are going to want to re-up, you know.
And you want to see if they can keep it rolling.
Even with the announced, increase in ticket prices, my guess is the renewal rate is going to be very, very high, and there will still be demand for Padres tickets next season. So next year, they're probably in good shape. But I'm always looking, you know, 2, 3, 4 years out if I'm running my baseball team. And how do we keep this momentum? How do we not let the train get off the tracks, so to speak?
There's one way to do it, and it's to make sure you have exciting players that are ready to play for the city and ready to play for each other and ready to play for the fans, just like they did last year until they didn't. But
signed Fernando Tatis Jr. to an essentially lifetime contract.
Yep.
You have apparently instigated negotiations with Jackson Merrill, who is one of those players. As much as we love Manny, my guess is for the average fan, Tatis and Merrill probably maybe bring them to the ballpark more. If I want to win, I need a Manny Machado on my team. But in terms of like the entertainment and vibes at the ballpark, those two guys to me are now the most important members of the San Diego Padres.
Yeah, I think they're like the cornerstones. You know, those are the guys that they're both young. They're both extremely dynamic. They play next to each other. It's really, really, you got to keep that going and continue. And you know, you're going to get it from those guys if healthy. Both of them are going to provide that every single day. So I just, again, for me, that's my biggest question mark is, can you keep that train rolling next year? You have to. You have to. You cannot get into a position, I think, if you're Eric Rupner or whoever, Eric Kutsenda, whoever's calling the shots, you can't get into a position where you're like, I mean, well, let's chop $40 million and trust AJ to go out and build it. They tasked him this year with something massive. He answered their call. So, you know, if you look at it that way with Eric Rupner and Eric Kutsenda saying, sorry, AJ, we're doing this and we're going to have to trade this. Let's see your best effort. Well, he gave them their best effort. He gave them his best effort he's ever had as a GM, his best year by far. And they stopped hitting with 24 innings to go. They just stopped hitting. So big sweeping changes aren't necessarily necessary, but you have to keep it going. I'm not saying you got to go out and sign Carlos Correa and a bunch of, you know, start throwing good money after bad. Do have to put a really competitive team on the field. And like we've always talked about, just because it doesn't look that way in April, maybe could look completely different in July. We know he has the ability to make moves.
And a lot of our off-season discussions will be focused on how do you do that? How do you put the most competitive team possible again on the field with what you have to work with?
With what you have to work with.
On the field in 2025.
Yeah.
All right, we will come back. We had some technical difficulties last hour, which means don't do this. We'll make a rare 8 o'clock hour appearance in our next segment, and then Brett Boone is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. Don't go anywhere. More Ben and Woods coming up after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
Ugh, I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
All right, a little 8 o'clock hour DDT after we had, again, some technical difficulties last hour. We already talked about the field problem at Snapdragon Stadium, which is kind of a local don't do this to keep an eye on, and how they're going to handle multiple tenants and chopping up the field, especially this time of year, Woods, because September, October is when you'll have Wave, you'll have San Diego FC, you'll have Aztecs, and you'll have just been finishing like the rugby season from the summer. I mean, that field is taking a beating right now with so many teams playing on it.
So our buddy in the chat, Purple, earlier when we were talking about it, said, yeah, and you can't really go to turf because then you'll miss out on some big matches, some big soccer matches with FIFA. Is that's true? It has to be grass?
Yeah, they're like for the World Cup, they're replacing the turf at MetLife Stadium with grass just for the games. So they can have the World Cup final there because they don't want to play it because you get more injuries on field turf than real grass. But you also get more injuries on chopped up real grass where you're sliding around on bare spots and muddy spots and sandy spots like we saw with the Wave game over the weekend. It's an issue. It's a problem.
And clearly none of these teams have ever played adult ball, Pauly, have they? The fields that we have to play. You know what? Cry me a river. All right? Just come out and play some adult ball one time. It's hard for me to ever feel bad for big leaguers in any sport. The most pristine conditions. They're used to it, but no, you're right. I saw the pictures going out. I guess I didn't realize it was that bad.
When you show up at fantasy camp, it must be a real treat because those fields in Peoria are perfect.
Yeah, pristine. You just want to lay on them. You just want to be on them. Everything. I mean, it's just even the worst field there is still better than anything you've played on.
I will say the Petco Park field is great. When I was up at Dodger Stadium, it was like a putting green.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, their grass looked like a putting green when
Petco
I was
too.
On it.
It's unbelievable.
It's amazing.
We got to play
it's like
there.
Bouncy. It's
we
like
got
spongy.
To, yeah, it's almost like there's. It's weird, man. It's just.
It's perfect.
Everything is true. But yeah, man, you're a pro athlete. You're out there and you're playing, and there's patches of sand and things like that. It's just not good, man. It just can't. What's the solution?
I mean, you need a really good turf keeper and, you know, strategies. And sometimes that does take some time.
Yeah.
You know, fields, the first time you put them in, you know, you got to dial it in a little bit. It takes a while. So hopefully they figure it out. Otherwise, you know, they may have issues going forward.
I literally could put this in do or don't do this, but John Sterling, the great John Sterling, he came out of retirement, did he not, Benny, to call these games on the radio for the New York Yankees in the playoffs? And last night they ran into they ran into two outs in one inning. Somehow they managed to still score a run in that inning. When is the last time that happened? Two outs on the base pass, you end up scoring a run anyway, but Jazz Chisholm got picked off second. Anthony Rizzo got picked off second. Here's what the great John Sterling had to say.
The 0-2, a bouncer, and Rizzo is going to be picked off. He's in the middle between second and third. Hedges now throws to second. On the way to third, back to second, back to third, tagged out, end of inning. Boy, if that wasn't the Yankees, that's what they do, run the bases like drunks. Well, Glaber will lead off the next inning.
It's so good. They run the bases like drunks.
That's what they do. Run the bases like drunks.
I would like very much for Jesse to weave that in next year at some point.
It is funny. I think in New York, you hear a little bit more of that than anywhere else.
Yeah.
I can't picture Jesse saying something
what
like that.
What a legend, though. You can see Mudd.
Maybe Uncle Teddy, I could have heard something saying like that.
Uncle Teddy, 100%. They're running the bases like drunks.
And he'd probably get a call from someone if he said it at some point.
I can see Teddy saying that.
Who's drunks, I tell you? They're drunks, running like drunks. By the way, who's calling John Sterling? Adam, like, hey, could you not say drunks anymore? There's kids listening.
Adam, didn't you see the play?
No. Well, go you go watch it and tell me that they're not running like drunks.
Hey. And that was after Jeff Chisholm.
I saw it.
Had gotten
You're
picked
right.
off as well in the same inning. So.
John, Adam, call me, please. Trying to air check John Sterling. That was such an elite call.
Do you still have the John Sterling voicemail, Pauly?
Yeah, but we're out of time.
We got a little time for it. I loved that
it's
one.
The best.
Here, you call it up while I do our quick doo-doo this story.
DD mega doo-doo.
And it was obviously a sad and emotional moment, but last night the Columbus Blue Jackets played their home opener without Johnny Gaudreau, of course, who was killed with his brother in the drunk driving accident as they were pedestrians on the wedding weekend. Just so sad. But what a great tribute they had to start the game. They came out without their left winger, so you had kind of the missing man formation. And then the referees dropped the puck, and the players just froze for 30 seconds. Johnny Gaudreau's number 13, they just sat there. And no one did anything, kind of like a moment of silence. The season, the clock was ticking down, underway, had the empty spot, and then 13 seconds, they skated someone onto the ice, and they raised a banner for him, and it was an emotional,
gut-wrenching,
kind of night, obviously, for Columbus Blue Jackets hands. They've lost 4-3, I know. His best friend scored a goal. He said, I knew I was going to get one for Johnny. Yeah. I knew he was looking. He said, sucks that we lost. You wanted to win. Again, you can't, as we know, Padres fans, as much as you want to make
you
it
want
about the win.
The emotions and everything.
But they handled it right. They handled it well. And then that was our doo-doo this.
That was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
So, yeah, this was several years ago. We got offered the opportunity to interview John Sterling. And he hadn't retired yet. And we said, yeah, absolutely. He's like one of the elite voices of baseball, 100%. And they just said, all right, well, here's his number. Reach out to him and figure it out. So I sent him a text message. And a couple hours later, I got this phone call. I got a voicemail from John Sterling. I don't remember. I didn't answer the
phone.
Why
you didn't answer the phone? But yeah.
Yeah, Paul, this is John Sterling. It is 12, I don't know, let's say it's 12:30. On Wednesday afternoon in New York, so it's 10:30 your time. No, it'd be 9:30 your time. Please,
you kind of leave a voice message like a drunk out there, John.
Yeah. Give me a call when you want me on the air. I'd be glad to do it for you. I'd love it, as a matter of fact.
Aww.
So at some point, I'll be home late afternoon or tomorrow all afternoon. So just give a call. Thanks.
That's so good.
I think you just got tagged out between second and third during that voicemail, John.
Can we try to get him on again?
100%.
Absolutely.
Let's try again.
Absolutely.
Do we wait till the season's over?
See if they make the World Series.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the Yankees, remember a few months ago when they were struggling and like July and August and everyone was out for blood for Aaron Boone?
I mean, I didn't think he'd make the summer.
Wonder how they're feeling now as they're two wins away from the World Series. We will have Aaron's brother, Brett, on joining us on a Big League Wednesday. That is coming up when we return with more Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. It is a Big League Wednesday. They continue here through the postseason, even though our Padres are sadly eliminated. We got Brett Boone standing by. In fact, why don't we just get right to traffic, and we'll chat with Booney on the other side here on 97.3 The Fan.
Come, my lady, come.
And we're joined right now by Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. Insider calls presented by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Brett, host of the Brett Boone podcast featuring the most notable names in MLB and around sports every week. And Brett, we were just talking about how about 2 months ago felt like a lot of New York was ready to run your brother out on the rails. And how are they feeling right now, I'd imagine, with the Yankees 2 wins away from their first World Series trip since 2009. Man, oh man, how quickly things change in the world of baseball.
That's the beauty of New York. it's day to day. You're the greatest on earth. You fire everybody in the organization the next day. But that's what makes New York, New York. And I've always loved that part of it. You know, the fans are so passionate. And it is. It's not even week to week or month to month. I mean, it's day to day. You could be riding high and you lose the third game of that 3-game series and they're coming for blood. So that's the nature of it. You know, Aaron knew and knows, what comes along with being the skipper of the Yankees, but they're in pretty good position now, you know,
Brett,
watching these last two games.
Is that a good fan or a bad fan? Is that an educated fan or an uneducated fan?
I think it's just the way it is.
It's just the way it is.
The fans in New York now, I mean, and I always refer to this, they still think it's 1940. Like, the Yankees need to win every single year. There's no parity in baseball. You know, back when they were the evil empire, and they had more money than everybody else, and they won all those World Series championships. I think in the late 90s, they caught lightning in a bottle. You had an unbelievable group of guys that come along once in a lifetime, and they put together those four rings in short course. But other than that, World Series are really hard. They're really not only hard to get to, but to win. But in New York, because of the history and all the world, it's just like, oh, we're going to the World Series or bust.
Yeah.
And you know, 90% of Major League Baseball franchises, if their team were to go to the World Series and let's say lose, they'd come home to a ticker tape parade. Yankees lose, it's like, you better not even come home. You know, so that's just the mindset, the way it is. I don't think it's an uneducated fan base. I just think it's maybe a little bit jaded just because of the history. And, sure. And in 2024, there's just a lot more parity. There's a lot of other organizations out there that spend a lot of money. You know, you look at the Dodgers on the West Coast, they're proven money doesn't buy you a World Series championship. It's got to be the right group of guys, get on the right run at the right time, got to have a little luck on your side, things got to go right. World Series is no, especially today, you know, with the postseason and how long it is and how many series you have to go through. Even if you're the best team, you can't have a hiccup on your way. Where in yesteryear, 20, 40 years ago, you get to the end, there's only four teams in the postseason, and usually the best teams end up winning that. But it's a different world. But for me, it's plenty entertaining. I love the postseason. I've enjoyed all these games.
Us too. I mean, obviously, except for the last 24 innings from the San Diego Padres, it was so jarring to see, Brett, a team.
Unbelievable.
It was really unbelievable. I mean, and you know, I saw somebody in our chat the other day said, well, plate discipline has to be a theme moving forward. And I said, 24 innings? You can't base the whole season off of 24 innings.
Right.
I for me, it was odd watching them not do what they've done for like 166 games. I mean, it was just staggering to see. And there's nothing I can really attribute it to other than, you know, yes, obviously the Dodgers pitched well. They got guys to expand that typically don't. They made plays when they needed to make plays. It was jarring to watch, man. 24 straight innings without a run was jarring.
Yeah, and we always knew, you know, the Dodgers with Glasnow being down, not being at full strength from a pitching capacity, and Yamamoto kind of being a question mark going into that final game. How is he gonna pitch? Well, I think he answered that.
He
pitched phenomenally. I think Yu Darvish pitched a great game as well. He gave up 2 home runs, 2 solo shots, and that ended up being the real difference in the game. But yeah, there's no rhyme or reason. I think I put a tweet out because they pitched three shutouts in a row, the Dodgers did. They extended that. And I think they might have set a record for most innings.
One short, I think. One inning short.
They tied it. They needed one more, like, out. And then Lindor got a home run.
Yeah, Lindor got him.
Yeah, not in my lifetime. You know, in a regular season, if you go back-to-back shutout games, that's headlines. But they did it three times in a row in the postseason. Yeah. And I'm looking around going, I don't remember this ever being a thing. So, sometimes you got to tip your hat to the opponent. The Dodgers, we know offensively, they can explode at any time. They have so many weapons. But the way Flaherty pitched, and that really impressed me too. Flaherty, the way he pitched his last game.
Yeah, really good.
He's quite impressive. And I didn't expect that. You know, I thought the Padres were going to get to Flaherty. No, not the case. So sometimes you got to give credit where credit's due. Obviously, it was disappointing for the Padres after being up 2-1 in a real emotional series. You know, and I think they're developing some bad blood. And that San Francisco-Dodger rivalry is kind of shifting a little bit to Padres and Dodgers. But I think as a player, that type of atmosphere, even at times, is a bit hostile. Man, that's a lot of fun to be in the middle of.
But now, Boone, the Dodgers have their hands full with the Mets. That series is tied. Mm-hmm. It's going back to Citi Field today. The Mets, even though they have the highest payroll in baseball, they were not really expecting to be contenders. Even David Stearns, the new president of baseball operations, at the beginning of the season said, our window's more 2025, 2026. Yet here they are, three wins away from the World Series. What did the Mets do right this season, in your opinion, that has them to this point where they could actually beat the Dodgers and go to the World Series?
Well, I remember around All-Star break, we did our mid-season update that we do on my show, and I had the Mets dead and buried, but I also had Detroit, Kansas City. I had them not doing anything, not even coming close to the postseason, let alone getting to the second round, Mets getting to the final round before the World Series. This Mets team I'm watching, they've got a resiliency. You look at them on paper, they're the Mets. You know, they're not going to be in opposition for the Dodgers. They kind of get blown out game one. They come back right away in game two and even the series. This Mets team just seems to be a thorn in people's side. Kind of, I don't want to compare everything to the Arizona Diamondbacks of a year ago, but kind of the Arizona Diamondbacks of a year ago, the down and out, played a lot of postseason type games down the stretch just to get to the postseason. They had that crazy finish where they had to win one in Atlanta the day after the regular season ended. They ended up getting the job done there. They've just been resilient and a cast of characters just getting it done. Lindor has really stepped up, hit the big grand slam. Pete Alonso, they're two stars. Alonso's hit three postseason home runs, and then you're getting contributions from Winker, who I had Carlos Mendoza on the show. I said, tell me about this Winker guy. It looks like a psychopath. He goes, Booty, he's the type of guy you love to have on his team, but when he's on the other team, you love to hate him. But Winker's been a big part. He's got some big hits for him, Nimmo and Vientos, and it's just been, you know, not one guy getting it done. Severino's starting to pitch like an all-star again. Quintana. In the final game against Philly, I'm watching this game, and it's Quintana against Suarez. And I've seen Suarez in his postseason prowess, and I just thought, if Suarez pitches his game, there's no chance the Mets beat him. Well, Suarez pitched great. Quintana matched him, and next thing you know, the Mets are moving on in the second round. That ought to be a pretty exciting series. I think on the Yankee side, I'm watching the Yankees, really sloppy play. Bad base running for the Yankees last night, but Judge finally broke out, hit a two-run homer. Rizzo's back. I didn't expect him to be back. That's really important to shore up that infield defense. That's really not the best. But it was Cleveland last night making the mistakes, the big error in the first inning with the shortstop. I know it's windy. I know it can be like that in the postseason in New York, but you're a big league shortstop. That can't happen. Yeah. That ball can't drop. Later in the game, Brennan dropped a routine kind of fly ball to right field.
So, and then the bobble, too, in right field, letting a run score as well. I mean,
exactly.
Really sloppy.
That ball down the line. Yep. Yeah, it's just real sloppy play from a Guardians team that's pretty shored up and pretty good defensively. I was worried about the Yankees being the defensive liability, and it's been quite the reversal there. Another thing about the Yankees, and we talk about bullpens, obviously the Padres had one of the best bullpens around. Cleveland has a great bullpen. They haven't been great. Where the Yankees, they were a little shaky down the stretch with Holmes not being in that closer role. They put Weaver in the closer role. Now Holmes is more of a 6th, 7th, 8th inning guy wherever they decide to use him, but Holmes is starting to pitch like Holmes, the closer we've seen for the last 3-4 years. That is huge for that deep, for that bullpen and the mentality down there. Now Aaron has the feeling that he can go to Holmes anytime and rely on him. That wasn't the case down the stretch. So that bullpen getting stronger. Biggest thing I saw last night is Aaron Judge. He had a couple good at bats. He just didn't barrel them up, but he hit a sacrifice fly, and then late in the game he hit that 2-run homer. You could see some relief on his face, because if the Yankees are going to win the World Series, I think Aaron Judge has got to be back to the Aaron Judge we're used to in that MVP season. And so last night hitting that two run homer late to kind of put it out of reach, that's good for the Yankees and bad for Cleveland. They're in a tough spot right now, Cleveland being down 2-0.
It's crazy too, Booney. I mean, you've seen it in your career. Guys that had rough regular seasons, like guys like Giancarlo Stanton, you know, who's just like, well, geez, here, he's going to hit, you know, he's DH, he can't run, can't field. Something about October, he comes alive and starts hitting the ball, you know, harder than any human being should hit a baseball. I can't even imagine trying to play third against him or up the middle. I mean, he's just going to take your head off with it. When October comes, he arrives, and it's wild. And you see other guys like the Aaron Judges of the world who did break out, but
Kike.
Yeah, Kike, 13 home runs in October. I mean, it's just nuts, man. It is truly insane.
Bizarre press conference afterwards.
Very bizarre. Yeah, very, very bizarre indeed.
You know the thing about, and there's a lot been made, of course, when you're the MVP, when you're Aaron Judge, you're going to be criticized for everything you do. Yet at the same time, you're going to be praised when you're an MVP caliber player. But the thing about that is when Giancarlo Stanton, he's stepping up and he's carrying the mail for Aaron Judge when Aaron Judge is having a little bit of tough sledding in the postseason. When you're winning games, nobody cares.
Yeah, fair.
You know, it's a huge spotlight on you. When you're the man, you're not playing well, and that's and the team's losing. But as long as you win, it doesn't really matter. It's like, okay, big Hoss, we got you. We keep winning these games. We know you're going to be there eventually. That's a good feeling, because when you're out there, you're the focal point. You're not getting it done, and your team's losing. Man, that just it double stacks it on top of already a full plate for you. And the fact that the Yankees are winning games without their star being their star, that says something about the Yankees, and that's just gravy. Now Aaron Judge gets it going. Wow, then it's going to be real tough to beat that Yankee team.
Before you go, Booney, we had a topic earlier this morning. We were talking about Ha-Sung Kim and what the Padres are going to do at shortstop this offseason. Mm-hmm. What kind of value do you think he has? You know, coming off an injury, didn't have his best offensive season or defensive season, but he's clearly hired Scott Boras. He's gonna opt out. What kind of value do you think he's going to have on the open market?
Well, I think he's going to have decent value. Obviously, his ceiling was a year ago after he had that big season. He was a fan favorite in San Diego. Awesome. He's a really good player. I don't think he's an elite player where somebody's going to, you know, put him in the middle of the lineup and depend on him. I think he can play all over the diamond. I think he's a great swing guy. And maybe on a championship team, maybe he's not a guy that's in the lineup every day, but he has that ability to play second, play third, play short. He can do pretty much everything you want. A very valuable player. I think from a Padres perspective, and this is just my thought process, you signed Bogaerts to a long-term deal. He signed with the idea of, at least in the immediate future, he is a shortstop. He's coming from Boston as an all-star MVP caliber shortstop. All of a sudden, put him at second base, and yeah, he did the right thing. He said all the right things, and
played well.
I'm just here to make the team better. But I'm telling you, shortstops have egos, and the fact that Bogaerts was not playing short made him a little bit off. I think going forward, with the money you have wrapped up in Bogaerts, you let him play short, make him happy. Hopefully he regains that offensive prowess. And I love Cronenworth at second base. That, for me, Cronenworth, I think, is a plus defender. I think he's in his best position when he's playing defense at a high caliber level. I think that's going to attribute to his overall offense, his overall play as a player. I really like Cronenworth at second. I like Bogaerts at short. And Kim, we'll see where it falls, being a free agent.
Booney, we're out of time.
Thanks, Booney.
We're a week away. We'll talk to you about the World Series next Wednesday.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
That's Odyssey MLB Insider Brett Boone. Insider calls are presented by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Wasn't my take on Xander Bogaerts, but that's okay. That's why we bring on different opinions on this program. All right, we'll come back. Tampa Bay Rays have an even bigger problem than we all thought. Paulie will have an update for us on the Rindle Report. That's coming up next here on 97.3 The Fan.